Hello, and welcome to Spilling the DPT mini-season. I'm your main host, Dr. Ryan McConnell, an assistant professor at Belmont University's Physical Therapy Program. And over these next several weeks, we will be showcasing our talented students as they deliver solid interview styles on PT hot topics surrounding management and strategic planning. So sit back, listen, and enjoy.
This episode is called Don't Learn the Lesson the Hard Way, and we're really excited to share this information with you guys about what to expect as PT students going out in the clinic, as well as learning some of the do's and don'ts. I'm Hannah, one of your co-hosts, and I have Logan here with me.
Hey everybody, we are both current third-year students, and we feel that there is a disconnect between expectations and performance in the clinic, and so we are hoping this episode can bridge that gap a little bit and make everyone feel a bit more prepared and confident when it's time for you to go out and tackle the real world.
Yeah, and I feel like that can be pretty scary because, you know, a lot of us have been in school most of our lives, and we still have a lot to learn about etiquette in the professional world. So we hope you guys find this podcast entertaining but helpful.
Yeah, so first we're going to be hearing from two guest speakers, and then stay tuned until the end where we will share a few very interesting stories sent in from past PT students.
Yeah, these are going to be really good, so you definitely want to stay tuned until the end.
Okay, so let's go ahead and get started with our first guest speaker, Ashley Campbell. Ashley, I will have you start by introducing yourself and telling us how you got to where you are today, and then we will dive into some questions.
So I'm Ashley, and I'm a physical therapist at Nashville Sports Medicine and Orthopedic Center. That is one of my many jobs, my claim to fame, having far too many jobs. So I am a graduate of Belmont University, 2011, and I started my career in outpatient orthopedics in the Green Hills Star Clinic. So I was there for a few years, made my way out to Franklin to A-Game, the Star Clinic out at A-Game, which is a sports facility, and treated a lot of athletes out there, which was my passion. I wanted to get into specifically sports medicine. Did that for a couple of years, and then decided to kind of start my own business in the golf world of all things. I do not play golf. I'm actually really bad at it, but I do have TPI certifications, level 3 medical, and I also have my junior certification, and found kind of a passion for blending physical therapy and sports medicine with the sport of golf. Opened a business out there, actually, with Dr. Voigt, and started that out in Franklin in the early parts of 2015. It's called Performance One. At the same time, I was approached. I was no longer working for Star. I was approached by Dr. Bird's physical therapy team asking for some part-time help. So I started working at Nashville Sports Medicine as a PRN physical therapist, and I honestly don't even know what happened. But really long story short, I'm now the director of rehab at Nashville Sports Medicine and Orthopedic Center. I oversee the clinic here and kind of manage the day-to-day. And then I also teach continuing education courses, selective functional movement assessment, and some others. And I won't bore you with the rest of my...
Well, that's already a long list. So, fun fact, Ashley was actually one of my first CIs for Belmont. And so I got the pleasure of working with her back in my spring of my second year. So that was a good experience.
She was a very good student.
Thank you. I highly recommend, recommend. So, all right, we'll get started with our questions. And we're going to start out with a bang. You know, it's Halloween, so we'll start with a little spooky side. Can you give us, like, a horror story you remember of seeing a student that, like, made a mistake or something that really stuck with you, like, with a new student or a new grad?
So I would say I've been pretty fortunate to have good students, smart students, and new grad wise, I do the hiring, so I try to be smart about that. I think everyone always has, a moment where things get really awkward and uncomfortable with the patients. Patients can kind of make it that way, and your ability to respond to it as a student or new grad is not as quick or sleek, if you will. So that's probably a lot of what I see. A couple of safety things that I can remember have occurred where, you know, if you always remember, like, lock the wheelchair, hold the gate belt from your classes in PT school, and we don't see a lot of wheelchairs and gait belts in our facility here, but
there's still plenty of room for mistakes though.
Yeah, like, I've seen firsthand. Some really unintelligent choices happen with some gait training stuff, like stair training, that made me definitely hold my breath. I had a post-op day one hip scope patient almost fall off a step because my student was not guarding or anywhere near
rookie them. Mistake.
So, as far as like a scary thing happening, that's probably the biggest thing.
Okay. Now we'll take it as when you were a student or a new grad, what was one of your most scarring moments or most eye-opening moments that you experienced?
Gosh, there's probably a lot of them. I'll tell you a couple. So as a student, I would say my hardest rotation was my sports medicine rotation at Ochsner Sports Medicine in New Orleans. John Guido was my CI. Love John to death. We're still friends to this day. But he is a really, really tough CI, and he has a reputation of making students cry. So I went into it kind of thinking, you know, that I might cry, but I was going to try really hard not to. And he definitely made me cry, and he made me cry in front of a medical resident. I don't know if it was a med student or resident. Honestly, I was more worried about myself at the time.
I definitely didn't peg you as a crier. That's for sure.
Yeah, it was embarrassing. So he asked me honestly, a very simple question related to the shoulder in front of the resident who was over in the therapy, clinic hanging out. And, I mean, if you would have asked me the question 2 minutes before that resident was standing there, I would have known the answer, but I don't know. I just couldn't speak. I couldn't say anything. I looked like a total idiot.
And total blackout moment.
And then I started crying, and I just had to walk out. I just walked out
of the clinic. Once you start crying, you can't go back.
So I just walked out and had to pull myself together and then show my face back. I mean, it was like morning, so it's not like I had to make it through the rest of the day. So
humbling moment, I'm sure.
That was very humbling and embarrassing as a student. As a clinician, gosh, there's been plenty. I evaluated a patient and then started treating, and I treated for manual therapy and stuff for about 30 minutes on the uninvolved side, and got
that's me during all my practicals
to the end of it, and was like done and like reassessing the patient and like okay. And They then decided it was time to point out to me that I was on.
Once you're already
side.
Done and used all
so,
that time.
Yeah, that sucked. And then probably the other most like scarring like thing that I remember the most, and I tell anytime I teach, either whether it's students or when I go out and I teach the SFMA, and we talk about just like kind of the minutiae of the clinic. I was about 4 months into my practice, and I had a workman's comp patient that came to me, and the diagnosis from the referring physician was upper trapezius tendonitis, which I had never heard of before.
Never heard of it. Definitely not one from the textbooks.
That would be a really interesting diagnosis. And as we are taught, I fully evaluated the patient, upper and lower quarter screen. She had dermatome and myotome issues, and I was like, she had cervical range of motion restrictions. Long story short, I was like, this is a cervical radiculopathy. So when you document, you put your ICD-9 codes. At the time it was 9, now it's 10. And so I put cervical radiculopathy as her diagnosis on my eval, and man, did crap hit the fan. So, workman's comp does not like it if you give a workman's comp patient a different diagnosis, because then, a lot of times the patient will get, you know, lawyers involved and various things that they have something else going on, and they ask for MRIs and they ask for this and that. I full-heartedly believe, and my company and my boss backed me 100%, that I was in the right as far as I was treating the patient for the right thing. But it turned into a nightmarish situation. We had to basically, I treated the patient for about 6 visits before workman's comp, like, got the claims through and, like, threw up the red flag and got really mad. So we had to basically, like, eat all the visits, and then I had to continue to treat the patient with the quote-unquote correct diagnosis of upper trapezius tendonitis.
Did you kind of have to start from scratch and like re-eval and start there?
Yes, I had to redo the eval, make sure that was the diagnosis code, which, by the way, we didn't even have in our system. We had to make a new, like,
New, its own code.
It was an upper quarter tendonitis is what we called it.
Interesting.
It was like a very generic code. And then I had to treat it as such and make sure that my documentation reflected that. And I was not allowed to talk about the patient's neck. I was not allowed to educate them about their neck.
So it had to be consistent like through and through for the upper tract.
And that was miserable. It was really hard for me to do that because I felt like it wasn't what was best for the patient. It was a really weird situation, but I was only like 4 months in and I thought I was going to lose my job. Like I thought I was going to get fired.
Probably losing sleep at night. Were you
the head of workman's comp for the company mm-hmm. came to the office to talk to me about it. And I was like, oh my God, I'm going to get fired.
Definitely humbling.
I did not get fired. They were incredibly supportive of me. They helped me figure out ways to you get creative in how you if you're doing like an upper trap stretch, but you're doing mm-hmm. cervical traction as you're doing it, and maybe you're
kind of reroute your thoughts
on there. So I tried to do my best to give the patient what they needed without treating what I felt they actually had. So
sounds like a good moment that would be humbling as a new grad.
Yep.
So when you kind of flipped roles and went from being a student to a new grad, how long until you became a CI and started taking students?
Oh, man. I had a lot of students that would come, non-PT students that were trying to get into PT school.
Shadowing type situations?
And I really enjoyed teaching them while they were in the clinic and definitely knew I wanted to be a CI. I think I took the APTA CI course within my first 2 years from graduating.
Okay.
And I think I probably took my first student just over maybe a year and a half to 2 years out. It was probably 2 years because it was right after I took the class and I took my first student.
How did you figure out what the best teaching method was? I remember being your student and you told me ahead of time, you were like, this is what I do and this is what I figured out has worked. And I will say it was great. You kind of just let me figure it out on my own. And typically you would step in if needed, but you never embarrassed me or put me on the spot or anything like that. So how long did it take you to figure out what worked?
You know, when I first started, I thought like I really needed to have a really structured plan as a CI. And I quickly kind of threw that plan out the window and just realized that every person's different. I basically structure my teaching style around the way I learn best, which is like kind of trial by fire.
Mm-hmm. Just kind of throw them in.
Yeah, I think so. I like to let my students observe me at least the first little bit and kind of see how I do things.
A lot to learn there too, for sure.
I try to make sure they understand I don't expect you to be a replica of me. I don't expect my colleagues, my coworkers to be a replica of me. When I hire new people, I want them to be their own therapist. I don't expect them to be a bunch of little mini-me's, but I want them to be able to learn from my experiences. So I like to let students kind of jump in head first as much as they're willing to. And if they're holding back, I mean, I will put them in uncomfortable situations. I like to not hover. So back to John Guido.
I can attest to that. She does not hover.
Yeah. So John Guido used to hover over me. He would literally stand with a clipboard and a pen
over your shoulder,
physically over my shoulder when I would do evals and stuff. And I could hear that pen scratching notes as he was watching.
You're like, what did I mess up? What did I do wrong?
And so it was very distracting for me because every time I heard the pen scratching in my head, I was thinking he's writing something bad down. Which in reality, a lot of times he was making notes about things I did well.
Mm-hmm.
He always was good about balancing what I did well with what I needed to work on. And he was really good about forcing me to identify my weaknesses and say them out loud and then giving me feedback on the positives. But I hated that hovering sensation. And so actually at my midterm, at the 4 week mark when we did my midterm CPI, you give your CI feedback too. If they're a good CI, you should be able to give them feedback. And, he asked me what he could do better. And my one request was that he stop hovering. And that I didn't care as long as he could hear me. I didn't care if he was 3, 4, 5 feet
How
away.
Far in were you at this point? Were you multiple weeks in?
I was four
a couple
weeks
days?
In.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was
so
four
you built the courage
in.
At
so,
that point.
Yep. And I was like, I think I would do so much better if I couldn't hear you writing on the clipboard. And so he backed off. He was like, that's cool. I was like, I know that you're listening. I'm totally okay with that. I want you to listen and watch. But when you're physically breathing down my neck, I get really self-conscious, and then I feel like I just go down, I just fall apart. So we did that, and my second 4 weeks were like night and day as far as my confidence and my ability to get through an eval. And like he even said, he was like, that was really good advice, and he was like, I should, you know, I should try and identify that early on with students.
He saw you
like,
grow as you were forming your own clinician.
So I'm that way with my students. I'm in tune with everything that's going on in the clinic, like even with my coworkers and stuff. I'm just kind of always listening. It's actually why I usually don't get my notes done during the day, is because I'm paying attention to other things.
Very aware.
So I will, a lot of times with my students, I'll sit at my desk while they're across the clinic doing their eval, and I'm watching and I'm listening. And then I'll kind of jump back in. Or if I need to be like physically in the room, I try and just sit back and keep my mouth shut and let them do their thing.
I 100% built a lot of confidence being your student. So I would say your teaching method definitely pays off. And I think you should stick with it for sure. But since you've been on both sides of it, so you've been a student, you've been just a practicing clinician, and then now that you're a CI, what would be your three musts for takeaways or tips that you would give to a student as they are entering their first clinical or entering being a new grad as their own clinician?
Well, I think there's a massive difference between your first clinical and being a new grad. You learn a ton on your clinical rotations. I was totally different between clinical number one and clinical number four with 100% certainty. I mean, by the time clinical number four rolled around, I felt very confident that I could kind of hold my own. And so one is like, give yourself grace. So as a student, like going into that first clinical, it's super stressful. I mean, I can still like remember the sensation of like the nausea and butterflies of
I was super nervous and a little intimidated coming in to be your student for sure.
I'm told I'm very intimidating, which is so bizarre.
You're not though. You're like,
thank you.
You're not. Once you get to know you, you are not intimidating at all. And I tell people that still to this day.
Good. Thank you. Spread the word. But as a student, just realize that you do not know everything. You will not know everything. And you need to be able to kind of work your way through the hard stuff as best you can. And if it's a situation of safety or, you know, something could go really wrong, then you ask, but do your best to kind of let yourself grow in the really uncomfortable zones that are going to be part of
the clinicals. Step out of the comfort zone for sure.
As a new grad, same thing. I mean, you still have to show yourself some grace. You got to know what you don't know. Like there's a lot they don't teach you in school.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, I learn something new all the time, not just like diagnosis and treatment wise, but just how to deal with people. You'll grow and evolve in like how to handle uncomfortable situations, how to handle patients that just break down crying on you, how to handle really mean, like people can be really mean. And, you know, you kind of learn as you go with that sort of stuff. And that's probably the hardest part of being a new grad, especially if a patient knows you're a new grad. And I'm not saying you should ever lie, but I would always include your clinical experience as some of your, when they ask you how long you've been doing this, you know.
Be confident in what you know.
Yeah. Because as soon as they know that you're new and you're fresh,
they'll take advantage.
They will definitely, there are some personalities that will take advantage of that in different ways, and that can make it really, really challenging on you. So, but also don't be afraid to, you know, be confident. Especially with your coworkers, you should always ask questions, but don't let go of those opportunities to also, you know, impart some of your knowledge. I know hiring people who are fresher out of school than I am, there's stuff that I forgot, and when something weird comes in that I haven't seen in a long time, I look to them because they've seen it and learned about it more recently. So. You know, we're all here to help each other. So,
yeah. Well, thank you so much for being on our podcast entry, and we appreciate it very much. And I'm sure a lot of people out there, we actually put it onto a Facebook page asking if people would be interested in this topic. And we had 160 replies.
Oh, nice.
And so we are very thankful that you were able to give us some advice from being one, a student in the same program that we're in, and two, being on the other side of it, being a CI. So
Thanks for having me.
Wow. Well, Ashley said some really good things, and it's really nice to hear from people like her who kind of play a role in our program, and to hear that, you know, some of the mistakes that they've made, and to hear that they're not perfect either, and that we all make mistakes as students. And it kind of makes me feel better about like what I've done so far in the clinic as a student. I don't know about you, Logan.
Yeah, I'm very, very thankful she did not use me as any of her horror stories for her students, because I would have been mortified. But my biggest takeaways would be for sure making sure that you are being your own clinician. That would be really relevant for me being her student. I just know that I need to figure out what works best for me. And she really made a point to talk about that. And then also showing yourself some grace. I know it's always easy to be super hard on yourself and find what you did wrong, but you're not going to learn unless you look back at what you did wrong and take away from that. So what about you?
Yeah. Being honest with your CI, I think that's a big takeaway from that, because I know that it can be kind of difficult if you don't feel like you're really communicating well with your CI, or you're not getting a lot out of your clinical. You might be afraid to speak up and say something, but like, we just have to remember that they're really here to help us, and that's why they became a CI, so
you're
that we can
learn.
Get better. Yes, and we're there to learn, and so they want to hear if you're having issues and if you're struggling with something, and so don't be afraid to let them know.
Yeah, of course. I think that communication is key when it comes to being a student and being in the clinical setting. But I know our next speaker, Dr. Greenwalt, will have a lot to give, and I will let Hannah take over with that interview.
Okay, well, let's get started. Dr. Greenwalt is our next guest speaker, obviously. She's one of our professors at Belmont. So Dr. Greenwalt, I'll go ahead and let you kind of introduce yourself and talk a little bit about your career path and how you ended up at Belmont, and then we'll move on to our other questions.
Okay, great. Thank you. Well, thanks for having me today. Like she said, this is Suzanne Greenwalt, and I've been a physical therapist for 18 years. And the first 11 years of my career was all in full-time clinical practice and also in rehab management. My areas of practice have been in acute care and skilled nursing facilities, as well as inpatient and outpatient rehab settings. So a little bit of everything. During my time in skilled nursing facilities, I got involved with a geriatric residency program and started doing some teaching with the residency program. And that ultimately led me to developing some stronger connections at Belmont, and then transitioned into a full-time faculty position here in 2013. And I continue to practice PRN in skilled nursing facility settings.
Okay, so we're just going to start off on a cool note here. We were wondering if you had any horror stories or funny stories from past students in the clinic that you've seen, just any that maybe stick out to you over your time as a PT.
Yeah, okay, so that's a good question. I don't know if I would say horror story, but as far as, you know, some of those more traumatic experiences that students have reached out about, you know, going to the wrong facility on the first day, you know, if the site has multiple locations, you know, not knowing exactly which one you were scheduled at certainly does not go over well on your first day. So we've seen that happen before. You know, and other just little snafus like that, where somebody didn't check into like the uniform or other requirements, and then getting there and being sent home on the first day is always pretty traumatic for students.
Oh, gosh.
And I think those can be, you know, kind of rough introductions to the clinic world.
Absolutely. Do you have any stories from when you were a student or a new grad in the clinic?
You know, the one that always comes to my mind when I think about like those moments where it was a total learning moment, and also like, oh, I can't believe I just did that. When I was doing a clinical rotation at a hospital, and it was in the town where I went to PT school. And in fact, one of my PT professors worked PRN there as well, and she happened to be there in the hospital that day. And my CI and I were in a patient's room, and the patient was on contact isolation, so we were in gowns and gloves. And my CI left the room for some reason, and I can't recall why. And I finished up the patient's treatment, or was almost finished, but needed assistance in scooting the patient up in bed because I could not move them myself. And I walked out into the hallway to get assistance without thinking that I needed to take off my contact isolation gown and gloves, and walked right out in the hallway. And it just so happened, like, as soon as I walked out, my professor happened to be walking down the hall, and I just got... a big earful about not following precautions. And of course, she was the faculty member who had taught us about that. And I just remember being mortified that there I was standing in the hallway in all this isolation garb. And of course, the hallway was packed with nurses and other people. But I will say, to this day, whenever I'm leaving a patient's room and I've been in isolation, like, gowns and gloves, I always think of that story and can, like, almost just picture her voice being like, take it off before you leave the room.
Oh, my gosh. That would be definitely traumatic for me.
And then probably one of my most memorable or more traumatic experiences, I was a brand new grad and I had a patient I was working with in an acute setting. And I went to do a transfer with the patient and we got to the chair successfully. It was a cardiac patient, cardiopulmonary patient, and I don't remember full diagnoses, but she had a chest tube. And all I know is that after the transfer, I noticed that the chest tube was no longer in place, which, as you all know, is a really, really big deal.
Yes.
You know, it took some work with the nurses and the medical team that to kind of figure out what had happened. And what we think happened is that this had been dislodged prior to that moment in therapy. But that was super traumatic for me to see that happening, because I just felt like in that moment, oh my gosh, like I did something really, really wrong. And
right. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
So do you have any pointers for students or new grads on how to develop confidence once they get out into the clinic, or maybe any advice for those who maybe seem overly confident as a student?
And those are both good questions, because, you know, those are two ends of the spectrum. You know, you don't want to be so underconfident, but you also don't want to be overly confident, because certainly we all still have stuff to learn. I would say that for those that are underconfident, like, your clinicals is your time to build up your confidence. So use that as a chance to ask as many questions and to practice your skills. You know, it's kind of a gift, because never again in your profession are you going to have someone else right there who can help you and ask any question to, and who ultimately is responsible for the decisions that you're making. Mm-hmm. You know, like, once you have graduated and have a license of your own, you are responsible for everything you do. So those clinicals are really that time to build that confidence. You know, it's a gift that we have to be able to spend so much time in the clinic with a CI. So I would say ask as many questions as you possibly can. There are no stupid questions. And feedback I get from CIs, honestly, they're more frustrated when they have students that don't ask questions than students who do ask questions. So I would say for those that are underconfident, just go into it thinking, like, this is your chance to get confident, and every PT has been in your shoes. Every PT has been there. But definitely don't shy away from opportunities because you don't feel confident in what you're doing, because this is your chance to really gain that knowledge. And for those that are overconfident, you know, at some point or another, that'll probably get checked by your CI or another clinician, because you always, always still have, you know, more stuff to learn.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Dr. Greenwald. That's great advice. I definitely think I can get better at asking questions in the clinic. I think I've seen how that can be more beneficial for me.
Well, it can be nerve-wracking. It can be really nerve-wracking to show your vulnerability like that, but I will say you'll gain a lot from it.
Okay, so kind of switching gears a little bit, can you tell us a little bit about your teaching method that you've developed and kind of what led you to this teaching method that you use, whether that's in the classroom or in the clinic?
Yeah, that's a good question. I would say in the clinic, when I have students with me in the clinic, which doesn't happen as often as it used to, but I still have those occasional opportunities when I'm in the clinic facility to take a student that's there for the day, you know, I ask them a lot of questions. So if we're doing chart reviews and reading through a chart and, you know, they tell me, yep, I read that page, that looks good, like, I'll start asking questions. Like, why are they on that medication? What diagnosis do you think that's for? Like, it doesn't say that they, you know, their past medical history doesn't say that they have this, but do you think it's a possibility they have it? You know, but really doing that type of critical thinking as we go through documents. And then even the same with treatment planning and being around patients. I like to have a lot of discussion with the students, really trying to get inside their head, trying to figure out where they're coming from, why they're thinking the way they do. So yeah, I'm definitely, the teaching method I use in the clinic setting is definitely very conversational. You know, we have a lot of discussion, and I think that works really well. As far as in the classroom, I think what I have found has worked the best for me is when I can bring clinic situations into the classroom. So whether it's through true stories of patients I've seen or other case studies, but when we can take that foundational knowledge, whether it's in a course like pharmacotherapeutics or cardiopulmonary, and really implement that in a patient case, I think then it has more meaning and value for students, and they're able to absolutely retain it more as opposed to just like spitting out details.
Yes, I definitely agree. And I've already kind of seen where that helps us translate it into the clinic. So that's a great method. So kind of in summary, could you give us maybe three takeaways or tips that you would give to a student before their first clinical setting or before maybe they go out into the real world as a new grad?
Yeah. You know, one of the neat things about clinicals is that you get to go all over the country, or when it's not a pandemic, potentially all over the world. Those travel opportunities and being in different geographical regions are such a gift because you will encounter PTs who have gone to so many different schools. You'll encounter students from other schools, and you'll begin to realize that there are a lot of different ways to practice physical therapy. There are a lot of different techniques out there. Some schools do things a lot like we do here at Belmont, and some schools do things very differently. And so take those moments to really embrace and learn other practice patterns. So I would say avoid, you know, going into situations of that's not how we learned it in school, and kind of making that assessment in your mind that, oh, they don't know it the way we did it. That doesn't necessarily mean anybody's right or wrong. It just means that there are other ways to do things. And so let your clinicals be a time that you figure out what techniques you like the best and help shape what kind of clinician you want to be, because there's not always one right way to do something. So that'd probably be my first takeaway. My second takeaway would be your clinicals, what you get out of them, it truly depends on what you put into them. So the amount of effort you put into them, the questions you ask, the time you invest in it is really going to be, it's up to you what you get out of it. So I have seen students, even on rotations that they're not, that's not their favorite, still come away with so much new information because they decide to just really embrace it for what it is and still take every moment to learn. And so just know that you'll get out of it what you put into it. And then my third piece would be, you know, definitely as you start a new rotation, take those first few days to kind of sit back and observe a lot. Observe the personalities in the department, observe the schedules, observe what people do for lunch, observe how things go, because you'll learn kind of what the unwritten expectations are for you as well. And I share that, you know, with a story in mind of a past student who, like, every day at lunch would walk out to his car and sit in his car and eat lunch and not stay in the therapy gym. And it had a very negative effect on the rehab department. They thought less of that student because he didn't stick around when they sat and ate lunch together and talked about patients and brainstormed about ideas or maybe did little in-services. So be a part of the team, you know, observe what everyone else is doing and be a part of that team. Cause while you're there for those 8 weeks, you are a team member.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Greenwald. We really appreciate all your advice and for being willing to come on and talk on this podcast. So just thank you so much.
You are welcome.
Okay. Dr. Greenwald had a lot of good advice. You for sure don't want to be that student that is walking down the hallway in your PPE after being in a room with a patient that gives you some type of exposure, especially when you're going to see one of your professors or teachers. And then something that seems like something so small would be eating lunch with your CI. I feel like this is going to go a long way in helping build that relationship and that bond as you learn from them.
Yeah, it's not really something I had thought about before, but I can see how that's really important, especially to be able to build a personal relationship with your CI. For me, I would also say, other than what you said, those were good points, but another thing is don't be afraid to ask questions if you're worried about your confidence and whatnot in the clinic. I know that everyone says that there are no stupid questions, but in all honesty, I think your CI is going to think better of you if you do ask those dumb questions than not ask any questions at all.
Yeah, so, you have to build that confidence somewhere.
Yeah. Okay, so let's get to the good stuff. We asked for a few stories from one of our clinical coordinators about some of the craziest things that have happened to past students in our program, and she had a lot to share, but we're just going to go over a few. So, Logan, do you want to take the first one?
Yes, okay, I'll start out with two, but this first one sounds like an absolute nightmare. So, a student and their CI drive in the parking lot on the very first day of the student's clinical and had a minor car wreck in the parking lot. And obviously that's awkward, but to make it more awkward, the CI ended up suing the student for car repairs. And I just cannot, I cannot wrap my head around the idea of spending 8 weeks with my CI if they are in the process of suing me.
Oh my word, I cannot imagine that. That would be a tough thing to go through.
That's
for
tragic.
Sure.
Tragic.
So everyone, you know, make sure you're not just worried about how you're presenting yourself in the clinic, but know how to navigate the parking lot.
Use your blinkers.
That's an important one.
Okay, and then another one we had given to us was a CI wrote in talking about how she had two students. They were each a year apart, so she had one year and then one the following year, and both of these students, on the very first day of their clinical, when they were exposed to dry needling, each of them fainted. So that was 2 years in a row where she had a student faint on the very first day of their clinical. And let me tell you guys, if you think you are not going to be that student that faints, you are probably wrong, because I was that student this summer. I was helping lift a patient in my acute setting in the hospital, and I was the person to discover a bed sore that nobody knew was there. And it was my first time seeing a bed sore, and I had to leave the poor nursing staff hanging, and I ran out to my CI and fainted into her arms. So,
and
never.
And you also hadn't eaten anything that day.
Yeah,
right?
I had not eaten. That was a rookie mistake. But all right, and then Hannah's got a good story to top all this off.
Okay, this one is my personal favorite, and this one's kind of long, so
it really paints the picture though, so it's worth it.
Yes, definitely worth it. Okay, so this was a response we had to a post that we made online. So, I'll just start. This is his narrative. So, I was a new grad about 2 months into my career when the company I was at assigned me a student. Let's call him Dan. One day we had a young nurse come in. We'll call her Becky for a simple issue. I told Dan it was all his. Now, Becky was an attractive girl, and Dan obviously thought so, as he made a comment about it before the eval. I brushed it off and told him to just get it done. The next session, Becky comes in dressed like she's about to hit a nightclub. Very skimpy clothing. I thought this was odd. Her and Dan have another session. I can sense there's a bit of flirting. It wasn't enough to intervene, but I just noted it. In the third session, this patient brings her mom, and things get weird. The mom basically interviews Dan as if he was asking for her daughter's hand in marriage. Dan looked extremely uncomfortable, but manages to get through the session. Afterwards, I asked what that was all about, and he just said he was as weirded out as me. So before the next session, Dan asks if he can talk to me about Becky. He tells me that she is crazy. She has been texting him nonstop and was driving around his neighborhood looking for him. When I asked how she got his number in approximate living area, he said she messaged him on Instagram asking about her shoulder, which is what she had come in for PT. He said he was uncomfortable treating her, so I sent him on lunch early and planned on treating her myself. However, once she realized Dan wasn't there, she started crying hysterically. She refused to be treated by me and said Dan was the only one allowed to work with her, and she didn't understand why he would lead her on. I asked her about calling him, and she said that he gave her his number on Instagram, and they were supposed to meet up last night, but he stood her up. I asked if they had met up before, and she refused to answer and stormed out. So sounds a little fishy here. All right, so when Dan returned, we decided he would no longer be treating her. Once again, the next session, she cried. I asked her about her and Dan, and she did say he was only not continuing to treat her because of his, quote, stupid girlfriend, unquote. So apparently, Dan had a girlfriend, and he said that she was now messaging his girlfriend, and he didn't know what to do. So I asked him about it again, and to my surprise, his story changed a bit, which I assumed this was the version that he was telling his girlfriend. So in the end, I had the patient switch clinics. I thought that was best for everyone. and I did not have any concrete evidence that Dan and the patient had had inappropriate interactions, but I suspected. Dan went on to finish his rotation and graduate. I hope he remembers not to hook up with any patients in the future.
I wish you guys could see my face right now.
That may or may not be the craziest thing I've ever heard happen to somebody in the clinic.
I mean, no joke.
I feel like this goes without saying, but guys, don't hook up with your patients.
Don't get involved with your patients outside of the clinic.
Seriously.
Do yourself a favor. Okay, you guys, thank you so much for tuning in. Myself and Hannah had so much fun along with our group members, Brittany and Grace, and we would like to give a special thank you to Ashley Campbell, Suzanne Greenwald, and Gail Birch for their input for the content of this podcast segment.
Yes, thank you guys so much for being a part of this, and thanks for all you do for us. And to everyone else, thanks for tuning in for this episode of Spilling the DPT.
And that's all for this episode of Spilling the DPT. We'll look forward to spilling with y'all next time. And if you don't mind, in the meantime, drop us a rating and a comment. And we'll look forward to you tuning in next time.